What is Peace Brain? Peace Brain is the synergistic connection between our mental and emotional bodies, blending the electrical power of the mind with the magnetic force of the heart. Listen and explore how to create unity worldwide as we blend science and metaphysics, open our hearts and minds to the possibilities of peace on Earth, and create the life we are each destined for. Featured guests range from angel communicators to zoologists and everything in between. Now here is your host, Dr. Gail Lash.
Welcome to the Peace Brain Show. This is Dr. Gail Lash, and I'm very happy to have you here today. I want to open with a quote from Robert Fulghum, and he wrote the book, Everything You Need to Know You Learned in Kindergarten. And here's the quote. We could learn a lot from crayons. Some are sharp, some are pretty, some are dull, some have weird names, and all are different colors, but they all exist very nicely in the same box. And I love this quote because it really represents a lot of what I think about what Peace Brain is and what I hope you're going to learn on the show today and in our future episodes. And that is really that we must honor the diversity of life on the planet. And that not only means the human race, but also of the animals and the plants and the minerals and the elements. And just like the crayons in the box, life is really more interesting when all the components are different colors and different shapes, textures, sizes, smells, sounds. My point is that everything is connected. And that's what the Peace Brain Show is really about. It's about connecting all the dots, connecting them from the science end of the spectrum to the metaphysical end of the spectrum. So in these shows, we're going to be covering everything from talking about ecology and zoology, animal behavior, national parks, sustainable development, how we actually can make a better world in our scientific world, what new inventions there might be out there to create a new world that is one of peace and prosperity. And then also move into the spiritual realm, the metaphysical realm, the way that we talk to angels, the way that we talk to God, whatever God is for you, the way that we can psychically communicate with each other and to our Creator, all that is. So we'll get into a lot of different metaphysical teachings, such as the psychic readings and communicating on and a healing aspect of the body and how we can bring in spirit into our body and purifying our own thoughts and really turning on your, what I call your peace brain and tuning into it so that you can connect your mind and your heart and walk in the world in peace, even with the drama and the chaos that we see, unfortunately, and not laughingly, but tragically around us many times in our world. So take a breath. And let me open with just telling you a little bit about who I am. And then I want to go in and introduce our guest today, Taylor Brooks. He's a colleague that works with Peace Brain with me and has some really interesting things to share about his life and about what Peace Brain is to him and what peace means to him and to the earth. And then we're going to end with a Peace Brain meditation for you that will get you in that Zen mode of being able to walk out into your day and really find peace in your community and within your own life. So let me just start and tell you a little bit about where this all came from. My background actually is as a biologist. I was trained as a scientist and an animal behaviorist. I studied lemurs at Duke University, and they are the primates from Madagascar, if you didn't watch the movie Madagascar, if you don't know what they are. So they are amazing, fantastic creatures, and I was very interested in evolution of our life on Earth and into animals and biology. I actually, after school, went in to work at zoos And I was a zookeeper for many years, working with mainly primates as the first part of what I did, from small primates like the monkeys from South America or the monkeys from Africa. My particular favorite is something called a saki. You'll have to look it up, S-A-K-I. It's an amazing little animal that comes from South America. And in fact, I used to always think about taking it home in my backpack from the zoo because he was so cute. We had a baby saki, and they're black and white, and they're really just adorable. But as you know, primates are not pets. So obviously, I did not do that. I just played with them at the zoo. So after my zoo years, I realized that in order to have conservation really work on this planet, we needed to start working with the people who lived where the animals are actually coming from and where they live and their natural habitats. And as a biologist and going to the zoo, I really loved the time at the zoo when there were no people there. So it was kind of ironic when I realized that I needed to start to work with people. I really needed to focus on sustainable development and conservation. And zoos in the United States do work with conservation as one of their mission points. It's really one of their top priorities is to have conservation programs abroad to do in situ research and preserve the animals that are there, work with the local communities, uplift the communities so that they can gain revenue actually from ecotourism, from promoting the sustainable viewing of wildlife and not the killing of wildlife, obviously. So these programs are really important, and there's many, many programs that are excellent around the world. And those are what I began to study and go into different parts of the world. I went to Indonesia and spent a couple of months in Lombok and worked with a guiding group that was a villagers that wanted to start a guiding organization to be able to take tourists up and down Mount Rinjani, which is this amazing volcanic mountain that's about 12,000 feet high. And of course, you start out in the tropics very warm, and you climb to the top of the mountain, and it's below freezing. So it really is quite a change to go up there and camp on the top of this caldera with this beautiful lake in there. And on the way, you see all these monkeys, all these macaques and different monkeys, and the beautiful forests of Lombok. And that's what the villagers wanted to preserve. So they were starting this ecotourism venture where they could bring in revenue to their own community and preserve their environment at the same time. I went to Ecuador and studied with an artisans group, a women's artisan group that lived in a village near a reserve called Makipukuna, which is on the equator. It's in a cloud forest reserve. It houses spectacle bears and lots of toucans and other birds, some leks of scarlet macaws. And it was really wonderful working with the women who had received a grant from USAID, actually, to buy machinery to make crafts out of the local nuts, the palm nuts, and the local palms, and do woven baskets and all kinds of jewelry and sell them at this reserve. And so I studied with them to see if they actually had a concept of the connection of nature and versus the women in the village who were not doing this artisans group. And there was a difference. It was very interesting. One of the women said to me, you know, I used to just think that a bird in the bush was something that we would hunt for dinner. And then I realized that the birds and the bushes and the rain and the water and the mountains were all connected, and that we actually needed to preserve the bush to preserve the rain on the mountain so we could have rain for our crops and it could support the birds. And so she saw the connection between everything, not just the uses as resources that humans would go in and use for their daily lives. And that really opened the eyes to the villagers and to these women. They had great training programs for the other villages. They would talk to the tourists who would come in. And it was a really beautiful scenario that they started there in Marinitas, which is a village near Makipukuna, the reserve. I also did work in Belize, and Belize, I love this country in Central America. It's an amazing place where you have such a diversity of humanity. Many cultural ethnic groups reside there in harmony, and I love that. You have the Garifuna, you have the Creole as the main population, the Scots and English, Irish that came in to log the mahogany that were there. You have the Chinese that are there, the Lebanese, the people from the United States who have migrated down to Belize to live and to be part of that community. And there's many diverse habitats as well, all the way from the Mayan as well. The Mayan peoples are still there. The Mayan archaeological sites with the ancient crystal skulls and the connections like Indiana Jones found are very true and very real there. The shamans, the healing medicines, the earth, the sacredness of the earth and the caves where you go into the Mayan underworld, into the ninth underworld, and can communicate with Ixchel, who is the goddess of the rain and the medicine and birthing there in the Mayan communities. I studied howler monkeys there, and again, the ecotourism of monkeys and the harmony of people in different villages being able to make a living out of tourism. So tourism became my focal point for bringing that unity between conservation and sustainable development and the connection with the earth and all diverse peoples and biodiversity. And I realized in this oneness as I traveled around the earth and saw all these different cultures, all these different animals, traveling to South Africa, traveling to Thailand, and many other places, Brazil, that we're all connected. We are all one. And when we actually get to know each other, we can create peace on earth. So this is the purpose of Peace Brain and of my company, Tourism for Peace. Because when we can become hosts and guests and really get to know each other in one of those two capacities, because everywhere we go, we are either a host or a guest. You know, right now, I am your host and you are my guest on the show. And thank you so much for being here. So wherever you go, whether it's either in a foreign country or actually just down the block at a neighbor's house or across town at a different ethnicity, at an Asian restaurant or a Latino restaurant or just serving someone in your own home, you are a host or a guest. And when we can really start those friendships, really get to know each other, really have dialogue about what is meaningful in our lives, then we can create the foundations for peace on the planet. And I want to go one step further, and then we'll introduce our guest. And that is, when we start to create these peaceful, not only within ourselves, these peaceful places, if you will, a place where I have my peace sanctuary in my own mind that I go to each day. And when I create a peace in my workplace or my home, and I can actually make that be a designated place of peace. And for example, our house here in Atlanta, Georgia, has a labyrinth out front. A labyrinth is a walking meditation garden that has been around for over 5,000 years in various forms. The basic form is a classical labyrinth, which has seven circuits, seven circles that you walk in a particular pattern. And we put in a labyrinth to be this walking meditation garden that's open 24/7 to people to come walk. It's free. It's there. It's our kind of gift to the community, if you will. And we've put a pole, a peace pole, which is actually from the United Nations, and it says, "May peace prevail on earth," in various languages. And we have our peace pole, says it in English, in Chinese, in Cherokee, which is the local indigenous culture for this land here in Georgia, and in Spanish. And so we have those four languages that are on our peace pole. And it simply, again, honors the diversity. And in fact, when we dedicated the peace pole, we had people, probably 50 or 60, come walk our labyrinth, and we invited Cherokee elders, which is the First Nations here of Georgia in the United States. And they came with their big drums and their their songs and their unity drums, where they were giving beautiful speeches of how we are all one rainbow tribe and we are all dedicated to peace. So this has become a place of peace, our labyrinth, our Dancing Bear Labyrinth is what it's called. And my vision, and I hope your vision as well, is to create these places of peace all over the world, making trails of peace or peace trails all over the world. And in fact, we're putting together a website called World Peace Trails that will be able, you will be able to catalog and locate your place of peace on it as well. So with that, that's our introduction to what Peace Brain is. And this today, I'm very happy to have to continue kind of the discussion of really what Peace Brain is and what this show is all about, is one of my colleagues, Taylor Brooks. And Taylor is our web and IT director for Tourism for Peace. He is working with all our WordPress websites and our apps and our ebooks and our Scrivener research. Scrivener is a great program if you haven't checked it out. And Taylor actually in his day job works at Georgia State University here in Atlanta as the information systems specialist. Now, what I really admire about Taylor is that he's fluent in Spanish and French and English. Oh my gosh. Congratulations, Taylor, on that. And get this, he has degrees in cognitive neuroscience and psycholinguistics. So welcome, Taylor. Happy to have you on the show today.
Thanks, Gail.
So tell us a little bit about your background first. What made you get into cognitive neuroscience and psycholinguistics, for example?
Well, so I've always been interested in the brain and language specifically. So my first love was really language. I've always been interested in languages and how we learn languages and how to best teach languages and so on. But as I moved forward through life, I also began to realize the importance of the biological aspects of that kind of pursuit. So I started becoming more interested in the brain as well, and that's kind of what led me to cognitive neuroscience and linguistics. And so that's really how I got into that whole frame of mind and started following that calling. Yeah.
I think you were sharing with me that you want to understand someone who's fluent in multiple languages. Could you go into that a little bit more?
Oh yeah, exactly. So my main interest in this field is bilingualism and multilingualism, especially how does the brain interpret and store multiple language systems? So is there only one area of the brain that has, you know, certain aspects of language such as semantic knowledge or phonetic knowledge or things like that? And if so, how do those separate systems interact? How do you know to process one area of the brain, like one area of that knowledge base versus two areas or three areas or so on? How do you keep those separate even if they're in the same space? So that's kind of what interests me, like cognitively, how do we separate language systems, but also on the level of the biology, or is there a separate area of the brain that holds, you know, second or subsequent languages?
Wow. Have you been able to do some research on that at the moment?
So when I was an undergrad, yeah, we did some research on how native Spanish speakers who are learning English interpret English sentences. And so one thing that I don't want to give too much away because we're working on a publication, but basically what we found was that people who were higher functioning in English, if they were, you know, ESL students, they process sentences a lot more like as if they were using Spanish rules, but behaviorally, when you look at their behavioral responses, they are very close to native English speakers. So that's something that's really interesting to me, is like how come, what's going on in the brain to say, okay, here is a I'm using my first language initially to process this, but in the end, I behave as if my second language is my first language.
Interesting. It's the brain is an amazing organ.
And
I'm happy you're studying that, because multilingualism has always fascinated me. And I think people who are fluent in more than one language, it's really a powerful tool, and a powerful tool to not only open up parts of your brain, but also then to connect, obviously, around the world and culturally with many different aspects of the human race.
Yes, so, I definitely agree. I definitely agree. I think one thing that I found being able to speak multiple languages is a lot of times you'll come across someone who may be new to this, to wherever you are or to places that you visit, and it's one way to instantly break down barriers and just be like, hey, we are one people, and I'm here. I've learned part of your culture, and now I want to learn more, so that's why I'm here.
So with that, what kind of drew you to the company, to my company, Tourism for Peace?
Well, I saw an ad for it online, and I thought, well, this is such an interesting idea, and I guess my whole life I've been moving more and more toward this idea that, like I just said, that we're all one people. There is, I mean, you know, distinctions between cultures exist, but in the end, we're all humans. And being able to share those cultures with one another are what leads to more mutual understanding. So that's kind of one reason, you know, internally that I started coming to Tourism for Peace. And I was like, well, let me take this opportunity and learn more about it.
So where have you traveled around the world?
I've been many places. I guess I started off by exploring Europe. So I've been all over Europe, you know, England, France, Italy, Germany, Turkey, Greece. And then I've also been, you know, through South America. So South America, Latin America. I went to Peru just recently, came back from that in October, but before that I had been to Cuba and Mexico and many of the Caribbean islands, and I look forward to going and exploring more of, like you were talking about, Belize and Costa Rica in the future, and I also would love to visit Brazil, so.
You've really seen a lot of the world. Congratulations. So you mentioned Peru, and I know I want to talk about peace in a minute, but this really, to me, is actually a really good tie-in for peace, because I know you have a business venture that you were talking about starting in Peru with another person, and to me, this kind of sums up how we can work together to help create these businesses that do, in a tangential way, create peace on Earth. In other words, they help uplift the human body, the human spirit. So tell us a little bit about, if you don't mind, about your business in Peru.
Yeah, so my friend and I were starting to make contacts with people on the ground who grow certain things, certain medicinal herbs and spices. And we're going to try to bring those into the United States and really expand their use, because we find them to be effective, and we think that, you know, one thing that we think is that humanity, especially in the Western world, has lost touch with herbal and traditional medicines, and in many cases, that kind of knowledge is just disappearing. So one thing that we're passionate about is bringing back the, quote-unquote, I guess, nature's medicine knowledge. And so the idea is that we would help farmers down there make, you know, a little bit more money and improve their lives, but at the same time, you know, require that people who join into our venture respect the earth. And so one thing that we, you know, when you take plant material from a plant, you are saying to the plant, like, you're offering your life to help me. So you have to respect the, I guess, the spirit of the plant as much as you can, and say to the plant, you know, I'm using this part of you, but in order to use it, I mean, by using it, I'm helping protect you in some sense. because I'm furthering, I'm allowing, I'm saving you from the deleterious effects of, you know, modernization and climate, maybe not climate change, but from the deleterious effects of human activity on your system.
And that's because you're harvesting it sustainably, in other words, with the people there.
Exactly, exactly. So the whole idea was you would have these, you would kind of enforce these quote-unquote rules, but they would really be agreed to beforehand with the producer to say, you know, we value the plants as well as the earth and as well as the human aspect of producing these products, and we want to really just allow the plants to flourish by being as sustainable as possible.
And so tell us a little bit about what this plant, the particular herb, is good for. And I know you have a personal story about that.
Yeah. So, well, I don't want to give too much away because we are still in the process of setting up the business. But I will say that this particular plant that we're talking about that really started this journey is really good for, it's like a natural pain reliever. So you make it into a tea and it makes it, and it's a very, like, very quick acting pain relief kind of herbal medicine. And it really, I found it basically because my friend brought some back and then we began to use it. And I started using it whenever I was sore after workouts. Because I, you know, after I work out, I don't like to put too much, you know, artificial things into my body anymore. So now I start using this instead of using like pain relievers such as, you know, Advil or Tylenol or something like that. So that's how we discovered this kind of this product initially. But as we've been exploring the opportunities more and more, we've moved toward other products as well.
Excellent. And that's what I was meaning. You have, and you particularly, have an amazing life story, which I hope you write up in a book, Taylor, about being able to lose lots of weight through your workouts, through your changing your life and your diet, and then, as you said, using this herbal remedy for the soreness of the workouts. Do you want to expand on that just a little bit?
Yeah, so, you know, it's always hard to talk about yourself, but since you asked, I will. So, yeah, recently at the beginning of this year, I started off, I just turned 24 last September. In September 2014, I turned 24, I should say. And I was just way overweight. And I was like, you know, I've got to do something about this before I get too much older. So I decided to make a change. And I started working out and eating better. Well, I will say for the first about 5 months, I pretty much just focused on working out. And then I wasn't losing as much as I hoped. So I decided, well, working out alone is not enough. So I need to start focusing on my diet. And then I became aware of all the crazy things that the standard American diet, or SAD, just allows us to put into our bodies. And it's just mind-boggling how, in the dark I was. So I really began to focus on what I ate and what I put into myself and what I put on myself in terms of beauty products and things like that. And I started losing weight very quickly, and now I'm down 105 pounds from where I was this time last year.
Woohoo! Congratulations!
Thank you.
That is amazing. No, thank you for sharing this story. It's such an inspiration, and I think people, you pointed it out, that we really need to start to be aware of what we do put into our bodies. Yeah. Because there's a lot of things that don't belong in our bodies or are not synergistic with a, you know, healthy system.
Exactly. And I think that goes, some of these things actually lead to conflict in the world as well. Some of the things that we put into our bodies cause secondary effects that lead to world unrest and totally defeat the purpose of a peaceful world.
So explore that a little bit more with me.
Okay. For example, some certain products such as, in the supply chain, there are a lot of things that come to us that we have no idea where they come from. A lot of people don't care, don't think about where did this product come from. And many times they come from way across the world. And the person who is harvesting or, gathering this material is not treated in a humane way. So, for example, there's a sulfur mine. This doesn't necessarily pertain to what you put on your body, but it shows how things that you use may not be obtained in a sustainable method, which leads to unrest and leads to, inhumane conditions for part of humanity to live in. So, for example, there's sulfur mines. I think they are in New Guinea. And in these sulfur mines, sulfur is a valuable commodity, but it's used in many things. So you can find it in, they use it a lot for like a catalyst when they make certain metals. And they use it for sulfuric acid and fertilizer for plants. But the way they mine it in these countries is very inhumane, if you will, because what they do is they send people down into these volcanic craters, essentially, that are spewing with poisonous gases. And they don't, these places don't give them any type of gas mask. They just go in, and many people die from working in these sulfur mines, but they have no other choice because the area they live in is impoverished, and that's the most money they can make in one day for their families. So you see people carrying on their backs two buckets full of sulfur just straight from the mountain. And it's stories like those that made me really try to start looking more into where are the products that I use sourced? Where do I get these things, and how do they affect the world on a larger scale?
Wow, you're absolutely correct. And that's really what we are attempting to create, a new world that is just and is fair and everyone has enough and is based on an egalitarian, unity mindset. Absolutely. I want to bring up something, and that's these sustainable development goals. It's a little sideways topic, but not really. It's along what you just brought up. The United Nations puts out every 15 years a new mandate for how to create sustainable development on the planet. And the millennial goals that were created in the year 2000, they ended in 2015. And so in September 2015, the United Nations met again and created the next 15-year plan that goes through 2030 with these sustainable development goals. And there's 17 of them. And, one of them is talking about life on the land and what needs to happen for that. Another is reducing inequalities and then creating sustainable cities and communities and decent work and economic growth. And so you have that, as you're talking about that, not disparity between the haves and the have-nots. So all of this, gender equality, good health and well-being, these are all parts of the sustainable development goals that we will talk about on some other shows. But it all comes down to, as you just pointed out, what we buy at the store. There's a story behind each of those products, and that really can make a difference in not only what we spend with our dollars and our buying power, but what we then, that energy that we put into our body, as well as, of course, all the products, all the actual ingredients that are going into our body as well.
Exactly.
So let's talk a little bit about peace. And what is peace to you, Taylor? And what would the world look like if it was a peaceful world?
So to me, peace is a world in which the first instinct of everybody is not to become upset. That's what I see a lot of times, is people just become so upset over everything. And peace to me is a world where the barriers to being happy and, you know, happy is such a esoteric concept in this sense, but in order to, I guess, illustrate my point, we'll use it. So happy, I guess, in the world that I think peace is, in a world where peace exists, I should say, happiness is not necessarily the goal, but a byproduct, right? So because everybody is comfortable and able to provide for their families, provide for themselves, reach their actualization goals, these types of barriers that exist today, such as education and low income and income inequality, these things need to be addressed and addressed soon, because to me, peace cannot exist without those types of, I guess, not equal playing field, but, you know, an equality of access.
Yes. Keep going.
Okay. Yeah. And so, that's what peace means to me. So in a peaceful world, I can see, like, as we were talking the other day, I said something that, you know, still sticks with me, that artificial boundaries, are just impediments to peace. And I find that people are so willing to, view themselves as part of a certain group, and anybody outside of that group is just not part of them, you know, not worthy of their time, not worthy of being even respected, even in some cases. And to me, that is just totally absurd, because in the end, we will all die, and in the end, we're all humans. So why not just embrace one another while we are on this earth?
Yes, I love that. Absolutely.
So I think that's the basis for peace, is really, first, the recognition that we all have worth. Second is the removal of barriers to equality of access. And third is just realizing whatever you want to do in your life.
So take a breath. Those
Some
are three
deep great subjects.
Yes. Those are three great prescriptions for creating peace in our lives and in our world. And they seem so esoteric in some regards, and yet they are really only a breath away.
Exactly. The hard part really is going to be, how do you implement that at scale when you have all these forces and all these other individuals who have yet to, I guess, I don't want to say this cliched phrase, but see the light, you know? How do you battle against people? How do you, what's a good peaceful word for this, Gail? How do you fight against this notion that we all are separate, that this ingrained notion that we all have come to accept? How do you fight against that when it is such a prevalent and widespread belief?
Well, that's a great question. And my answer to that would be, and actually, this is great timing for this, to talk about this, because it really is about not battling against anything. For example, and I know that it's hard to find another word for that, but Mother Teresa said, you know, do not invite me to an anti-war rally. I will not come. But if you invite me to a peace rally, I will be there. And so it is about, number one, picking and choosing the positive words and actions and thoughts within ourselves, and putting that forth out into the planet, out into the world, into our community and our workplace and our homes. But truly, to answer your question, how do we not stay separate? How do we, you know, get into that peaceful mindset? To me, it is really about you know, peace begins with me. That's the classic song. But it really is true that when I can be in my peaceful state of mind, when I can walk into my job or my home or a grocery store or a meeting in a peaceful mindset, then I am actually influencing other people in the room. You know, we're energetic beings. We're more than just our physical bodies. We have this biofield or aura or whatever you want to call it, our energy field around us that actually does permeate out many, many, many feet around us. And you know, you've felt it yourself. All of us have. When you walk in, when someone walks into a room that just takes over the room, and you go, whoa, and everyone sort of turns their attention to that person, and they've commanded the room. Well, each of us have that capacity and that power to command the room just by being your peaceful self. And that's really where it starts, and that's really where it ends, because it takes just a few people to make a difference on a worldwide scale. In fact, as the human race, really, it's just a few people. You know, it only takes a small group to make a big change. So what I would encourage all of us to do, and we'll lead into a Peace Brain meditation in just a minute, so that's why I said this was really a good segue in one regard, that there's a, when we walk in peace, we really are, even though we think we may not do anything other than, you know, buying the right products at the store and being aware of my body temple and what I put into it, the foods I eat, the lotions and soaps I put on it. But also, when I walk into a room and I'm peaceful, people notice. And I'm talking about all of us. So it's, even though you may feel you're not doing anything, just be that peaceful self, and you are.
That's really well put, Gail.
We can stop viewing also in that peaceful mindset. What the corollary to that is, I stop viewing everyone as separate. So we add that collective peace, if you will. It's realizing, as you pointed out, Taylor, at the beginning, we're one. You know, the oneness, when you travel around the world and you see, yes, the different cultures, which is the beauty. That's the crayons in the, you know, in the box, the diversity of the different ethnicities and cultural dances and foods and rituals and ceremonies and ways of building your buildings and dressing your body and, you know, in new clothes. So it's that cultural diversity is like the crayons in the box, but that doesn't mean we have to separate ourselves, because the crayons in the box don't. And when we can get into that collective mindset and really start to believe, yes, we are one human race, and yes, we are one planet Earth, the water planet, that if I can then stay in my peaceful state, walk into a meeting, and realize that everyone in the room has value, and everyone in the room has something to say, and everyone in the room has some wisdom and life experience that can contribute to whatever the issue is on the table. And that means that we actually listen to each other and that we actually start to honor the diverse viewpoints. And it may not be my way, but hey, my way is not just the highway, you know, that this, we can learn from each other and actually create a better world when we start to add in other mindsets and other solutions, because there may be better solutions out there to the different problems we're facing on the planet. Have you ever experienced going into a meeting and finding different solutions on the table?
Me personally?
Yeah, you personally.
Yes, I think there have been many times when I've gone into a meeting myself, and I think one thing that I do before I go in, so I'm first, let me say this, I am actually the leader of a group of alumni from my college, and we have our executive board meetings, and one thing that I've started doing before them is just very like a small meditation, if you will, where I just kind of cleanse my mind so that I'm ready to receive whatever the people there are going to give me. And so, yes, I feel like I have found that doing that allows for a much greater and more productive exchange of ideas than if you come in with any type of preconceived notion of what you want to get done and what, you know, my way as leader is not necessarily the best way. So my role as leader is to be open to the ideas of everybody else in my group.
Very well put. Yes, that's a great practice. You know, being able to center yourself and come in with that openness into the meeting. Excellent. Good job. So with that, I guess let's go ahead. Any last thoughts? I'll just throw it back to you one last time. Anything else you'd like to add for the listeners today on the show?
Well, I think I would just end with a call to all the listeners to really embody the peace that they hope to see. I mean, just as Gandhi said, you know, be the change that you hope to see in the world. And that is the only way to make change, is we all have to go about it one at a time, bit by bit.
Thank you, Taylor. I really appreciate you being on the show today and sharing your wisdom and your journey. And it's been a delight. I look forward to having you back.
Great. Thanks, Gail. I look forward to it as well.
Thanks, Taylor.
Bye-bye.
So let's go into a peace brain meditation. I invite you all to take a breath and just settle back in your chair or wherever you are and relax. And let's start with a grounding cord. This is an energetic connection actually between your body, the tip of your spine, that last vertebrae, and Mother Earth. So I invite you to create a visualization. Sometimes I'll use a tree trunk or a waterfall or a string of light. And from the very tip of your spine, drop down that tree trunk or that waterfall or that beam of light and have it go all the way through the planet and down into the core of Mother Earth and really anchor well into Mother Earth. And take a breath. This grounding cord, you can widen to the width of your hips so it's really supporting you. And allow all of the energy of the day to just flow down the grounding cord and into Mother Earth so you can be in present moment, in this present time, with this meditation. A grounding cord is useful to have as a tool for 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, and let all of the energy that may come your way, the drama, the distractions, and just let it flow down the grounding cord into Mother Earth to allow that energy to be recycled into good new energy. So it takes it out of your space. You don't have to deal with that. It's not yours. And many times we carry around energy that is not ours. In fact, most of the time we carry around energy that's not ours. So have some amusement and know that that's normal. And allow the distractions and your thoughts from the past and the future to just flow down into Mother Earth and be here now in present moment. And again, take a breath. Now I'm going to invite you to go to something I call the Peace Sanctuary. And this is a place of peace in your mind that when anything comes your way that rattles you, that throws you off, that gets you anxious or nervous or fearful, or just tied up in that chaos, that you can go to the Peace Sanctuary and find that place of peace within you. It starts by recognizing your heart and that your heart is where your emotions come from and where you actually have a beautiful connection to all that is on both the planet and in the stars. And so be in your heart, center in that sacred place of your heart where you have the connection to the divine within, to yourself. And then begin to imagine with your mind a place of beauty, a place of tranquility, a place of peace. And for you, this could be a beautiful beach with the surf and the rolling waves and the seagulls and the salt smell. Or it could be a forest with the waterfall running and the beautiful babbling brook and maybe a deer off in the distance or a tiger lurking around the corner watching you with the smells of moss and wetness. Or it could be a desert with its beautiful sunshine and the heat warming your soul. Whatever works for you, whatever beautiful place that you sit, bring yourself to that imaginary place in your mind and your heart. And notice what's around you. I invite you to not only see the scene, but to smell the smells and to hear the sounds. My brother used to tell me that when he came back from war, he created a place of peace in his mind that was a beautiful beach with two chairs sitting on the white sand facing the water, with palm trees overhead. And he sat there next in the chair with his wife next to him, and they were at peace. And it was a place he would go to find his peace when he would get anxious and remember the tragedies that he had experienced. So I know there are many tragedies happening around the planet. And yet right this moment where you sit, you are safe. You can breathe. You can be at peace. And so I invite you to create a bench or a hammock or a place to sit, in other words, in your beautiful place of peace. And relax. Take a breath. This is where you can find your answers within. This is where you can be in that beautiful place of peace. Just for a moment or for several minutes or for an hour, however long you choose. And breathe it in. Be there. Allow your body to be at rest, your heart to slow down, your breath to be constant. And then I invite you to open your eyes and still be in that place of peace, even though you may be sitting in a car or at your desk or somewhere in your house or out in nature. This is always available to you to go instantly into this place of peace. So now be in your place of peace and go walk forth in the world. And I thank you so much for tuning in today. And I want to invite you to please go forth and activate your peace brain as you just have and put your mark on the World Peace Trails map. Many blessings.
Thank you for joining us on the Peace Brain Show. You can find us at tourismforpeace.com. Be sure to check out Dr. Gail's Alchemy of Peace coaching sessions, her Peace Master plans for your business or organization, and her upcoming book, Peace Brain 101. Tune in to BBS Radio Station 2 every other Tuesday at 5 p.m. Pacific and 8 p.m. Eastern for the Peace Brain Show and your next installment of Wonder, Inspiration, and Practical Peace.